There we go. I'm Nancy Crevier. I'm one of the co-chairs of the Healthy Living team, and I do have Caroline Gomez with us today, who works with Covering Kids and Families, to talk about the Affordable Care Act and the implications for tax filing for this year. And I think she's also got some other updates for us to hear regarding the Affordable Care Act. And we will take time or have time, I believe, for some questions, or if something happens and you want to interrupt, feel free to do that too. I mean, I don't think that there's Caroline would be against that or anything like that either. So if you're unsure of something or want clarification, please let us know. We'd be more than happy to take those interruptions and clarify or answer questions too. So Caroline, I don't know if you have anything more you want to say to start out, but I think we can get started.
Perfect. Thank you, Nancy. So as Nancy said, my name is Caroline Gomez with Covering Kids and Families, and we've been working closely with UW Extension for the past, like 2.5 years now, specifically on the Affordable Care Act, providing information, resources, tools, for all of the educators across the state who are doing any education around the Affordable Care Act. So today I will be doing some more updates in terms of how open enrollment went. We'll also be talking about special enrollment periods and what that means for people who haven't signed up for coverage yet. But then our focus of the presentation is actually on tax season and how the Affordable Care Act is changing how we file our taxes and what is going to be needed for consumers in order to make sure that they are ready and aware of any of the changes that they need to present or what materials they need to present when they file. And so the tax season has already started. We're in it. Right as we speak. So there are also some things that we've seen come up, and I'll also address some of those issues. So if there are any questions throughout, as Nancy said, please feel free to ask. But I will try and get through this information in a good amount of time so that if there are any final questions at the end, we'll have some time to discuss. So what I'm going to start with actually is the open enrollment period, which ended the second open enrollment period ended February 15th, which was just this month. I'm still getting used to not being crazy busy, but it's coming along. But now I have more time to think about next year. And so as we look at open enrollment, we kind of have to take a stroll back into the past and what we were looking at in terms of people being uninsured prior to the Affordable Care Act being fully implemented. So if you think about Wisconsin, in 2013, which was the last year before the first open enrollment really started and before 2014 coverage started in the marketplace, Wisconsin was about at a 10% uninsured population. So 10% of our total population was uninsured. About half of our population was on employer-sponsored coverage. BadgerCare and Medicaid represented 16% of our population. 15% of our population was on Medicare. And 6% was on other forms of insurance. Nationally, before the first open enrollment period, we actually were on an all-time high of 18% uninsured rate, and that's based on a Gallup poll that looked at, actually talked to consumers and asked them what their insurance status was. And so right before open enrollment one, we were at 18%. So right after open enrollment two, or I'm sorry, right after the end of open enrollment one, we had dropped from 18% uninsured rate nationwide to 15.9. And now, after the second open enrollment period, we then dropped all the way down to 12.9% uninsured rate. Granted, these aren't official numbers in the sense that the federal government or the census has posted it, and that's where we normally get our official numbers. However, because that information and data tend to lag a couple years, and we're kind of in the now with technology, I do look to the Gallup surveys and polls just to see where we're kind of sitting. And they've been doing this uninsured survey for over 5 years now, and we have reached an all-time low of 12.9 nationwide in their survey. So what does that really mean? So in open enrollment one, we saw 8 million people gain coverage through the marketplace. We saw another 3 million stay on their parents' health insurance, 5 million added onto the Medicaid program, which in our state is BadgerCare, and then 5 million selected plans outside of the marketplace. So in Wisconsin, for open enrollment one, that was 139,815 people that found coverage through the marketplace. And so this is obviously not a direct correlation to reducing our uninsured. We won't know that officially until the census data is posted, the small area health insurance estimates. However, if you were to base it on how many people were uninsured before, or in 2013, we had about 550,000 people that were uninsured, and now we have over 139,815 on the marketplace, which is really representing a fifth of our potential uninsured rate. Granted, you have to take into account that a lot of those people could have switched from different types of insurance onto the marketplace, but it's still promising. And then we had 81,274 people join the BadgerCare Plus program when they decided to allow childless adults onto the program in April of 2014. We did see some parents drop that first year, 62,776 from the BadgerCare Plus program because they reduced the eligibility for parents. And when I say they, I mean the Wisconsin government reduced the eligibility from 200% of the federal poverty level to 100% of the federal poverty level for parents. So that was a way that without taking federal funding, we were able to afford to expand the program for adults without dependent children by reducing the eligibility for parents, obviously parents with children, so there was some fluctuation in eligibility numbers. But we've still seen an increase overall in the state of BadgerCare Plus members. So now, if we look at those national and state numbers for the end of open enrollment two, which was November 2014 through February 2015, we see that 11.4 million people enrolled in coverage through the marketplace by the end of the open enrollment period. So we went from 8 million to 11.4 million. And that's including renewals and new people signing up. It's now up to 6.6 million people who stayed on their parents' insurance. And since December of 2014, we saw 10.8 million more people on Medicaid across the country. So then in Wisconsin, after the end of open enrollment too, We've seen 205,839 people or consumers select a plan in the marketplace. In the first 2 months of open enrollment, 90% of Wisconsin's consumers who selected insurance plans were determined eligible for financial assistance to lower their monthly premiums. So that's, you know, 9 in 10 people saw that they got discounts or some kind of assistance to help pay for insurance through the marketplace. We also saw the number of insurers or companies in the marketplace increase from 13 in 2014 to 15 in 2015, or for plans to start in 2015. And then the number of individual plans from those companies, we saw an average of 67 health plans per county, or average in their county. So some plans or some counties had fewer, but some counties I know, like for example, Waukesha had over 100 different plans for consumers to choose from. So, you know, talk about choices. And I say choices in the good and the bad, because obviously choices are good so people can find the plan that meets the needs of their family, but also bad in the sense that that's a lot to look over and make sure that you're really getting what you need and want. So, wow, choices. And then 80% of people in the marketplace as of December could actually buy a plan in the marketplace for $100 or less. So 8 in 10 people could find a plan that was under $100 a month. So yeah, so a lot of things that we saw, and the data is not even done yet, because I'm expecting that they'll give us some more localized numbers. I think in January we actually got an update from CMS with numbers by zip code that allowed us to look at a kind of a county locality data system that showed how many people signed up for marketplace plans. And we also compared that to Enroll America data, which shows what areas are more uninsured. And so this was something nice, because we saw some direct correlation to people getting coverage in areas where people were most uninsured. All right, so before I get into the next section, which is the tax section, do I have any questions about the first open enrollment period, or second open enrollment period, I should say? Okay, that's great. So then I will move to the tax section. So I guess the best way to start with the tax section is, why are we even concerned about people filing their taxes? As most of you should know, there is an individual mandate, or also known as the shared responsibility payment, or what people usually call the tax penalty, for people who did not have health insurance starting in 2014. So when Open Enrollment 1 started, it was so that coverage for people who didn't have health insurance could start January 1st. Obviously, the first open enrollment period went all the way through March, so not everybody's health insurance plan started right away in January, but as long as they started due to when they applied through the first open enrollment period, they would not have to pay a penalty for not having health insurance in 2014. However, there's a lot of people that decided to forego getting health insurance, or, you know, they didn't realize that there was a penalty, or, you know, they might have had health insurance but then lost it throughout the year. And so the first year that we'll see people being affected by this penalty is actually this year, as people file their taxes. To determine eligibility for health insurance, it's based on your income and your tax household. So how you file your taxes with your spouse and how many dependents you have in your household, all of that was used to determine your modified adjusted gross income, which people call MAGI. And that is what allowed people to find out what they were eligible for in the marketplace. So if people did not get health insurance in 2014, there will be a penalty of $95 per adult, or 1% of their household income. And it is whichever is more, with a cap of $295 this year, for a household. Children are, if children are uninsured, they will owe half of that amount, so half of that $95, or, like I said, a total of 1% of the household income, whichever is more. And so it will be this year when people are filing their taxes that this penalty will be applied.
Caroline?
Yep.
Sally, I have a question. So when you're saying $85 per adult, and it would be roughly around 47 something for children who are not insured, or 1% of that household income, but then you say is it capped $295. So what's every pay is $95 for a family? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last bit of your question. What was the last thing you just said?
So you said, though, that it's $95 per adult.
Yep.
1% of that household's income. And if there are children within this household that are not insured, then that would be like $47, what would be charged. But then you also set a cap of $295 for the household. So basically it's $95 per adult or 1% of household income not to exceed $295?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's all I wanted to just clarify.
Yep, and that's just for this year. So the tax penalty in future years is not to go over the average national price of a bronze plan. So they're going to look at all of the health insurance plans across the country, and when they average the lowest cost bronze plan in each of the area networks, that's what will be kind of like the capped amount that families could owe in the next several years. They capped it at $295 this year, but that could increase in the next years. And then the tax penalty is going up in the next few years. In 2015, it's $325 per adult, or 2% of the household income, whichever is more. And then in 2016, $695 per adult, or 2.5% of the household income. There are some exemptions, and we'll talk a little more about exemptions, but it will be when people file their taxes that they claim if they have an exemption. So what do you do if you have insurance? So you had insurance through 2014. What does your tax process look like? So most people, excluding those who signed up through the marketplace, they'll actually have it pretty easy. If some people already filed their taxes, they would have seen this already. It would just be a checkbox where it says, did you have health insurance in 2014? And so you would check yes, and then it'll ask, if it was employer coverage, Medicaid, which is BadgerCare Plus, Medicare for those who are older than 65, TRICARE, any other form of health insurance that's not marketplace coverage, all they had to do was check a box. There are forms that some health insurance companies, some employers did send their employees or members. But this year, it's not required to show that form. It's more for your personal records. So then, if you were insured, but you were insured through the marketplace, there's a little more to it. Yes, you did have insurance, so you're not going to have to pay the penalty. However, if you received advanced payment tax credits, or you know, the subsidies or the discounts or whatever you want to call it, it was based on your expected income for that year, your expected 2014 income. However, when you file your taxes, it's going to look at your actual 2014 income, and if there's any difference in the expected amount with the actual amount, there is going to be some reconciliation of those amounts. So what that really means is that if you had more income than you expected to have when you filed for health insurance, then you should have got less premium assistance, which means you might have to pay back some of those tax credits. On the contrary, if you received less income than you expected, then you should have gotten more of a premium tax credit, and that might mean you get more income from your return, or more money in your return. So what we could be seeing is that people are either having to pay back some of their tax credits because they thought that they were going to be making a lot less than they actually did, or they could be getting a higher return because they expected to make more but didn't. And also, one thing that people had the option of when they signed up for Marketplace Insurance was not accepting all of their tax credits. So some people, let's say they got $200 a month of a tax credit, and that would bring their health insurance to, let's say, $100 a month. If they wanted, they could say, you know what, I don't need all of that tax credit. I can pay for my health insurance and pay a little more. And let's say they only wanted to take only $100 for a tax credit. So that other $100 from that $200 amount would just get put away for them because they are still owed that amount, or like they've been issued that amount of a tax credit. So when they file and meaning that their actual and expected income stayed the same, they would receive that $1,200 amount that they kind of didn't use back in a return. So some people could have chosen, well, all people could have chosen to kind of do a little bit of that reconciliation from the get-go and just say, you know what, I don't want all of my tax credit back. And then they'll get it when they file. So in order to prove that you had health insurance through the marketplace, the IRS sent people their 1095A form. This also could have been downloaded from the health insurance marketplace website from their account. And they would then have to present this when they file their taxes. And using the information from that form, they would have to fill out a form 8962. This is the reconciliation form for the tax credits. So 1095A is what proves that people had health insurance through the marketplace. And actually, those forms that I was talking about from the employer or your insurance company that some people might have gotten, those are 1095B and C forms. Those are the ones that you didn't have to use when you're filing. But the 1095A is if you had marketplace insurance. And then all that information feeds into the form 8962, which is what they use to reconcile the tax credits. So this is important because if people really missed their kind of expected or anticipated income mark, they could be in a pinch in terms of having to owe quite a bit in back taxes because of the additional tax credit that they received that they shouldn't have. And so for this year only, the IRS is not charging a penalty for people who pay their taxes late regarding this particular issue. They'll actually have a full year to pay back those past due tax credits. So, for example, normally when you owe taxes, you have to pay by April 15th, which is the last day of the tax season. The people who find out that their that they received too much tax credit this year, they will actually have until April 15th, 2016, a full year, to pay those back. And then also, one thing that's always important, regardless of the tax credit issue, but just because there's a lot of people that experience changes in their income throughout the year and, you know, they don't anticipate it. For example, you know, they have a job loss or they have a promotion where they have a raise or they, you know, went from full-time to part-time. There's a lot of different things that could change your income. It is so important to let people know that if there's a change in their current life circumstances, that they should update their information, whether it's through BadgerCare Plus, if they're BadgerCare Plus members, or if it's through their Marketplace Health Insurance. It is so important that they update this information, and I think we're going to see why this tax season, because I think a lot of people might be impacted by having to pay some tax returns back or benefited by getting a little more back because they thought that they were going to make more in income. But regardless, it's so important that people update their information. That's one of the ways that we can teach people to be proactive consumers. So then the last category this tax season are people that don't have health insurance. So if they went uninsured for 2014, even if they went uninsured for parts of 2014, they could be subject to the tax penalty, which we discussed earlier. And so what that means is that for the amount of months that they were uninsured, they will have to pay a prorated fee for the time they were uninsured. There are several exemptions, many exemptions actually, but there are several exemptions that would either allow people to not pay the penalty or not have to pay the full penalty. For example, if people were uninsured for less than less than 3 full months, they actually would be waived from any penalty. So, for example, if someone signed up for health insurance starting in March 1 coverage, and they were uninsured for January and February of this year, they would not have to pay any penalty in 2015. There's also certain income-based exemptions. So if you are under the threshold where people have to file taxes, then you don't have to have health insurance and you will not be subject to the penalty. That amount for a single adult is about $10,000. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have that number. It's a little over $10,000 for a single adult. So someone who makes less than that amount would not be subject to the penalty. This is actually one that I had finalized for me, which I didn't understand, but now I fully do. So people who would have been eligible for BadgerCare Plus if our state expanded it the way the federal law wanted us to, so all the way up to 138% of the federal poverty level, they are not subject to the penalty because they would have been eligible for BadgerCare. And it's anything below that 138% of the federal poverty level. So what I didn't know is I thought it was that gap coverage for people who didn't qualify for BadgerCare from 100% to 138%, but could go into the marketplace for tax credits, but still thought that it was too unaffordable for them. that they would be waived from the penalty. But what I read into it, anybody under 138% of the federal poverty level, because we didn't expand it. Instead of IRS looking at all of the states that didn't expand the Medicaid program, but trying to like find out what their current eligibility is, I think they thought that might have been too much work. So what they did was they kind of put an umbrella rule on all of the states that didn't expand the Medicaid program. So anybody under 138% FPL that didn't sign up for health insurance, even if they were eligible for Badger Care, would technically be waived from the tax penalty. And then there's a lot other exceptions. For example, if you're a tribal member, you're not expected to pay the penalty. If your employer coverage is deemed unaffordable, which means that if the premiums that you would pay at your employer are more than 8% of your income, you are not required to purchase that health insurance. People who are undocumented, so undocumented immigrants, that was a huge concern this year. They were concerned that they didn't have access to health insurance through the marketplace or Badger Care, but they didn't want to have to pay the penalty. They are not subject to the penalty because they don't have access to health insurance. People who were incarcerated for the months that they were uninsured, they do not have to pay a penalty. People affiliated with certain religious sects that take care of their members in terms of medical costs, they will not be required to pay. There are also hardship exemptions. So if people experience homelessness, eviction, foreclosure, domestic violence, death to a close family member, and unpaid medical bills, there's a chance that they could qualify for an exemption. And so all of these exemptions are important because there's a good chance that someone would qualify if they do find out they owe a penalty. However, they have to use that 10 or 89-62 form that people would use for reconciliation to disclose what exemption they qualify for. So there's actually codes affiliated with each of these exemptions that a lot of tax preparers needed to learn this year. As good as it is that there are some exemptions, it could be a little more confusing than needed for people who didn't have health insurance to figure out. But hopefully the tax preparers are aware of all of these codes and changes and can apply that when they're helping people file. So then the last section, maybe I should open that up for questions. Any questions specific to the tax season and the Affordable Care Act? And then I'll be going into special enrollment periods.
Caroline, this is Nancy. Have you actually seen one of the 1095A forms?
I saw a 1095B form. Sorry?
Someone shared that she has a bronze plan, and she got the information now that, you know, what just came out recently because there was misinformation on those forms, so hold off, don't do anything at this point. So she did get that message. She was wondering, she's got a bronze plan, yet on, and the numbers are correct for her premium, what she paid each month for her premium, but it talks about the second lowest silver plan premium. And we weren't sure if she's got a bronze plan, why does it have on the form the second lowest silver plan?
That's a good question, Nancy. So the second lowest silver plan is how they determine how much tax credit you are obligated to.
Okay.
That's kind of their standard plan. So, for example, you can apply your tax credit to any type of plan, bronze, silver, gold, or platinum.
Right.
However, the I guess the most economic choice is that second lowest silver plan. And so whatever amount you get based on that plan, you can apply that tax credit to any other plan. So, for example, if you look at the second lowest silver plan in your county, and based on your income, you qualify for, we'll go back to that $200 amount tax credit, so $200 a month, and that plan would then equal that $100, you know, after the, so $300, but after you apply the $200 tax credit to that second lowest silver plan, you only have to pay $100. However, if you apply the $200 that you would get for that silver plan to a bronze plan, and let's say that bronze plan only costs $200,
right,
you'd pay zero.
Right.
And so a lot of people did choose to pay zero. Granted, there might be higher deductibles, higher copayments, but their monthly cost was nothing. And so we saw that a lot. That also meant that if they wanted a higher plan, like a gold plan, and the gold plan was actually, you know, $350, they'd have to pay a little more than that standard silver plan.
Sure. Okay.
So that was just, so that's what they're basing off of, and that's how they're going to then determine if you were, if you received more or less tax credit than you actually deserved, or, you know, based on your income.
Okay. Thank you.
Of course. Any other questions before we go to that next segment?
Caroline, the information you're giving, these numbers and stuff, is this someplace on our Google community, or? Because I've been trying to type little things for myself just as reminders as I, you know, work with people or as people talk about things.
Absolutely. So I wanted to bring a little more allure to the Swift line. So I do have slides for you on all of this.
Well, I'm just thinking because, you know, I will share this with our ag educators as well because, you know, there were farm families who did, you know, get onto, you know, the Affordable Care Act, but have them realize these types of things.
Absolutely. So this Swift line will be archived on the new web page that we've built, which is attached to the Google community. I'll also post it on the Google community. And I have some additional resources for you all that go along with the WISC line so people can listen but then also see the slides that I'm working off of. And then there's a couple of links that have useful information about exemptions and special enrollment periods that you guys can have at your fingertips.
Wonderful. Are those the kinds of things, too, that if I want to shoot it out on our Facebook page, I can do that?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So I'll get this posted by the end of the week on that web page, and then I'll put that on the Google community so you guys know you have access to it. All right, so I'm going to finish off with the special enrollment periods. So as you know, when open enrollment is over, people are not able to get health insurance through the marketplace unless they have a qualifying life event, which would then trigger a special enrollment period. Special enrollment periods last about 60 days, depending on the circumstance. But for the most part, they last 60 days, starting from the day or the event that qualifies you for the special enrollment period. There's a lot of different circumstances that would then trigger a special enrollment period. The one I want to start with, which is new and temporary, is the one related to taxes. So a lot of organizations actually pushed for this special enrollment period, and then it was approved by CMS when a lot of Congress representatives asked for this particular extension. And what it is that if people find out when they file their 2014 taxes that they owed a penalty for not having health insurance, they will be able to go into the marketplace and purchase health insurance for 2015. As people who are enrolling consumers, we were concerned that people weren't going to do anything this year, this open enrollment period, until they realized, oh, I'm going to have to pay a penalty, and the penalty is going to be higher in 2015 if I don't have health insurance. But the thing is that open enrollment ended February 15th, and the tax season ends April 15th. So there was going to be a good number of people that wouldn't have filed their taxes and found out about the penalty until after the fact. And they would have been locked out of the marketplace, which means they would have had to pay the penalty 2 years in a row before being able to do anything about it. So this is going to be a call for you all, and I will be writing a press release on this, but there is a special enrollment period for people who have to pay penalties because they did not have health insurance through 2014, and that will be through March 15th through April 30th. And this will allow those individuals to then go into the marketplace and sign up for coverage. So I really am relying on you all to promote this in your counties so that we make sure that people who didn't realize that there was any correlation to not having health insurance, that they still have a chance to get signed up. And, of course, Badger Care Plus is always available. So if people are low income, they can always sign up or apply for Badger Care Plus coverage. But, you know, this is going to be a last chance catch-all for the marketplace for people who didn't have health insurance. Okay, so additionally, just some examples of special enrollment periods are moments where a lot of moments that we experience all the time throughout the year. So, for example, individuals who get married or have a baby or adopt a child will be eligible for a special enrollment period. Any circumstance where someone loses health insurance, then they would qualify for a special enrollment period. For example, if you are, like, you know you're going to be laid off or you quit, or I'm sorry, you lose your job, then you would be able to qualify for a special enrollment period. For those individuals, if you know the date you're going to lose your health insurance, you actually have kind of two special enrollment periods. You have one before you lose your coverage and one after. So really, if you know you're going to lose your health insurance on April 15th, you will have 60 days prior to April 15th to sign up for coverage so there's no lapse in health insurance. That'll be especially important for people who, you know, have to maintain health, doctor visits, or, you know, they have a surgery coming up, something like that, where they're concerned if, you know, they're not able to maintain their health insurance. People who move out of their coverage area, so if you live in Milwaukee County, but you have a new job and you have to move to La Crosse, and your health insurance company doesn't have a network in La Crosse, you would be able to then go back into the marketplace and sign up for coverage. People who are gaining citizenship or legal residence, they would qualify for a special enrollment period. People through Native American tribes or members of Native American tribes, they actually can change plans once a month. That's actually a special category of special enrollment period, a special enrollment. Can I say special that many times? Yes, I can. Those who are leaving or were formerly incarcerated but are being released, they also qualify for a special enrollment period. And then people who have a change in income, that would change their eligibility. So if that means people who were on Badger Care but then have a new job that makes them ineligible for Badger Care, they would be able to sign up for Marketplace. If someone who qualifies for a tax credit no longer qualifies for a tax credit, they'd get a special enrollment period And so if there's any change in kind of the area that they're eligible for, that could trigger a special enrollment period. And then there's a lot of special enrollment periods that are associated with some of the exemptions we talked about. So, for example, if people experience hardship exemptions, those that I mentioned regarding homelessness or foreclosure or like losing your power, then you'd get an exemption for the time frame that you aren't able to sign up for health insurance. But then that would allow you to get a special enrollment period so you could sign up for coverage. So that's important to remember. So a lot of people that are dealing with a lot of hard circumstances could benefit from a special enrollment period. And then we're kind of thinking of different ways to provide outreach to people when open enrollment isn't going on, and there's actually quite a few ways. We were thinking of some of the health promoters and other organizations that have staff that talk to people about their health. That's one way to find out, especially because they talk directly with consumers in knowing, you know, if someone's going through a hard time. One group that we're thinking about reaching out to is the family law lawyers and practitioners. Because a lot of the services that they offer are associated with qualifying life events. For example, if someone's going through a divorce or they're adopting a child or they're dealing with someone who passed away in their family, there's a chance that they could qualify for a special enrollment period. So there's a lot of alternative ways that we could be reaching people who thought they didn't have access to insurance because open enrollment was over. So that's pretty much what I have for this presentation. So I can leave it up for some questions, and then I can wrap up with a little more closing comments.
Caroline, this is Nancy. I don't have a question, but I do just want to make a comment that, once again, you have all the information. I just cannot believe how much you know about all of this, so thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Caroline, question that I have is that with this information, it says I'm on the state finance team. Did anybody from the state finance team want this kind of information? Or you know, like for the ag side of things, who are working with families and like that.
So you're asking if they do want information like this, or can you share this with them?
Did they know about this with say?
Well, it was advertised through the Google Plus community, and there are several people on that committee, on the finance team, on our Google Plus list. And I think we were encouraging people, too, to share it with county partners or colleagues, so that was another way. But it will be archived, and that's also, I mean, once the archive is out there, anybody can listen along to it, too.
I think probably what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take the archive, and I'm just going to share that with everybody in the office.
Yeah.
If somebody has interest in like that, and then I'm just wondering, would it be beneficial, is it appropriate to share, like with my partner, say the public health nurse, and share with my DSS colleagues?
I would say go ahead.
Okay. All right.
Because
absolutely.
The website that it's going to, the Google Plus community is a closed community, but the website is a FYI account or a website. And that is open to the public, so
some of our public libraries might like it.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I say whatever makes sense in terms of who you think this affects, because, frankly, health and health care and this law affect everybody one way or another. So I'm more than happy to share this information as wide as we can get it. Additionally, I'm more than happy to do this type of presentation elsewhere. So if it makes sense, you know, let me know, especially now that open enrollment's over. I have a little more flexibility.
I think the other thing, too, Shelley, is if you know that there's a certain audience or that there are things that we can be providing to you to help your education locally or outreach efforts that we could make with these other partners, please let us know. We'd be more than happy to make plans for that.
Well, this is just, you know, I'm just kind of thinking off the cuff here. You know, the form that we get that has the earned income credit, homestead tax credit, child care credit, and that's a one page that talks about, you know, here it is, this is what eligibility, yada, yada. Is there any way that some of this information could be put together in a one-page piece like that? Because mm-hmm. I very readily share that piece with my partners to mm-hmm. say, earned income credit, homestead tax credit, if you're working with individuals who may qualify, please encourage them to take advantage
mm-hmm.
of
it. Mm-hmm. Is that, are you thinking like the Wisconsin Connections pieces? Is that what the one that you're talking about?
This is the one that Peggy Olive sent out. It was updated. Judy Bartfelt usually is the one that's involved with it.
Okay.
And updating it.
I was thinking about the ones that Amber Canto.
Oh, sure. I know what you're talking about, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I know the things that Amber does are I don't send and share those as much as I do this one, because it's one that Judy Bartelt puts together. It seems to have a lot of, for the families with limited resources,
sure.
It does not have the most common ones, earned income tax credit, federal and the state. It has homestead tax credit. It has the child care tax credit on it. And it
mm-hmm.
gives them, you know, if you made this much, then you may qualify, yes.
Well, maybe I can look at those Peggy Olive ones and see if I can mimic something for this.
And it may be such a thing, Caroline, that maybe I don't expect to put a round peg in a square hole.
Absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, I'll look into it for sure, because I think, you know, you're bringing up some good points, and if this can be packaged in a way that is easily shareable, then I want to be able to do that for you guys.
See, it's interesting. I'm thinking, you know, with my agriculture, you know, partners here in the office, they always have newsletters and they have things that they send out, and their meetings are coming, or, you know, this is the meeting time now, where you could have that, you know, one little sheeter that you could say, hey, can you know, you want to put this out on your table for those who may be of interest?
Yeah.
That's kind of how we operate in our office.
Absolutely.
Good idea.
So I will look into that, and I will get all the resources out there with this archive, since there's a lot around this topic area to know. If there's not another question, I can move to just the closing remarks. So like I said, this will be archived, and I'll put everything that is associated with this topic with it on our website, and then I'll also post it on the Google Plus community. I also wanted to add that Nancy, she, and you can talk a little more about it, Nancy, but she got accepted for a proposal at the National Health Outreach Conference?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. And so we actually are going to be putting together a poster. It's a poster for the Google Plus community and what we've learned using this method of communication with all of you on this topic. And so one thing that is going to be going out next week is a short survey that is just going to ask more so your feelings about your user experience using the Google Plus community and how it's either helped you or hindered you from learning this information from the Affordable Care Act. And that will help guide what we present on our poster. So if you guys can fill out that survey when it's ready, I'll probably send an email out as well so that we can get full participation. But really that will help both Nancy and I prepare for this conference, and it's such a great opportunity to share also what we're doing here in Wisconsin on a national stage.
Thank you, Caroline.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited about it. And then there will be a press release that I'll be putting out. It'll be talking about special enrollment periods, including the tax-related one that starts on March 15th. So that will also include some social media snippets that you can use for Facebook or Twitter or any other formats that you guys use. But I really push and promote using it because I try and make it general, easy to understand, and informative so that people know kind of what's going on related to the Affordable Care Act. So if you can use that when that comes out early next month, I really would appreciate it. And if you do use it, please let me know because we can count that in our reporting. And I think that's all I have, Nancy. Do you have anything else?
No, I don't, but I would just like to say again, Caroline, thank you so much for sharing the information.
My pleasure. Thank you guys so much.
Caroline. Pat yourself on the back.
Thank you, guys. And thank you for letting me do it a little bit after the planned date. Sorry about having to change the schedule.
That was no problem either, Caroline.
Yep, thank you.
Okay. So have a good rest of your afternoon.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.